This is Bootstrapped Web, episode 84. Wow, I can't. I am that jet lagged. Okay. It's episode 84, and it's the podcast for you, the founder who learns by doing as you bootstrap your business online. And I just got back about half a day ago from MicroConf Europe. So as you can hear in my voice and in my half a brain that I have right now, I'm pretty jet lagged. But this will be a fun episode. Jordan, how's it going?
It's great, man. We will see you through it, and we will extract whatever value we can from your experience in MicroConf before we let you go to bed. But it's nice to be back together, my friend.
Yeah. So this will be the MicroConf Europe 2015 recap episode. I jotted down some notes from the conference during the flight home that we can talk about here on the podcast. So we'll kind of like run through some of the key takeaways that I heard from the different speakers and just thoughts on MicroConf Europe in general. We'll get into all that.
Yeah, and it's a one-sided recap because I didn't get to go. So I will be playing the role of audience member listening in on the podcast saying, I didn't get to go to MicroConf. Tell me what you learned. Tell me what you found out. Tell me who you saw. So I'll kind of be able to very honestly ask the same questions as people listening want to ask.
Yeah, cool.
Oh, man, how about some updates though before we do it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what's going on your end, dude?
That's what I do now. When someone asks me how things are going, I take a deep breath.
Why is it like every one of our calls usually starts with that? Yeah, like,
you know why? Because you bottle it up. You experience a lot of freaking stress and worry and anxiety and planning and ambition and all this stuff, and you just don't share it that much. So when you talk to a peer who asks you how you're doing and you're actually able to be honest, you get to drop the guard and say, oh man, let me tell you how it's actually been. And I think that's why when we talk and you're like, how are things going? It's like, oh, I can finally not hold everything in.
Yeah, totally. That's definitely true.
Yep. So we've got a lot going on. We worked on a very big development project, the biggest update since launching the app. Up until now, the app that sent out abandoned cart emails, the email itself, the part that interacts with our customer's customer, right? It's obviously a huge part of the business because it determines the actual performance of the abandoned cart campaigns, which determines the success of our customers, which therefore determines the success of our company. So those emails that were going out were very rigid. You really couldn't do very much at all. And we had all this built-up demand, all these built-up potential partnerships, all this stuff waiting on our ability to be able to send out much more customized emails, new templates. That was the single most important advancement for the business. So we worked on a new email template builder, and we hired an outside contractor, really talented guy, but this thing went sideways, man. It was supposed to take a month. It took three, and it started sapping energy and motivation. We were kind of playing with fire for a while. So we basically we needed to get that done. And we just launched it last week, of course, with a few bugs and dealing with some customer service issues to make sure things are going right and apologizing for some things that aren't going right. But it's done, and we moved forward. So that's kind of what's been brewing and on my mind for 3 months now.
Yeah. What was the process of rolling out a major update like that? Because I know that in the early days of Carthook, it was basically just you and your co-founder. And your co-founder was basically in charge of the tech side of things. But now you brought in Ben, who was not involved in the beginning stages. So you've got Ben and you've got this contractor. And like, how is it with that process of rolling out a major software feature update now?
It's increasing complexity at a exponential scale. So it's one person's complex, two people is like four times as complex, and so on. And so we had Charlie, the original co-founder, who kind of understands the whole thing from the beginning, and Ben, who came in and has been on board for a few months, so he understands the system. And then we hired an outside contractor to do the development work, and so now it was three people. So the process really looked like me on Slack from the sidelines, like with pom-poms on, like with little emojis, like, I love you guys, I'm sorry, it's so difficult. But the value that I added was was as the customer. Guys, actually, it shouldn't work that way because this. Actually, I just want to upload my logo once, not for all three emails. So make sure it carries through. And when I resize it, make sure that carries through also. So I was like playing the role of user.
Yeah, like user experience. Yeah.
Yes, because I was like the e-commerce merchant. So that was like my role. The most value I added was not peacekeeping. It wasn't like we were arguing, but making sure the dynamic and positive energy was maintained.
And I'm guessing like Ben's role is kind of to be like the middleman between you and Ben and the contract and the developer contractor to like kind of translate the technical aspects. So like, oh, you know, to carry over this resizing of the logo from emails 1 to 3, that's actually going to require 20 extra hours of development time. And here's why. Like, is that
right? So it got tricky and it wasn't an easy thing. And we learned a lot from it, from the experience. It was painful and it hurt the company. At the end of the day, it slowed our growth. This is a real challenge, I think, that non-technical founders face. You just want something to sell. Just give me this thing that I want and give me this other feature and let me just go sell it. But if you're in a tech company, it's just not that easy. It's more complicated. And as a non-technical founder, you kind of have to learn not how to code, but the reason things are going to be complicated and why and all the human dynamic. You know, when you say, hey, I just want this other feature. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention this thing. Like you just fucked somebody up for hours.
Yeah.
And that isn't going to make them happy with you. So you got to be careful.
So now that you guys released this major feature, and I know that, you know, it's still kind of new and you guys are like ironing out bugs and all, what does having this email template builder enable you to do now that you weren't able to do before?
So exciting. I mean, first of all, one of the most important things that allows us to do is move on to the next thing. So that's huge. Our next thing is a Shopify app, and we think that that has the potential to really have a very big impact on the company. So just the fact that we're done and now we can finish our Shopify app, that itself is really big. The actual new technology itself, we wanted to get it done before Shopify because if you think about a Shopify user, they're very design conscious. That's one of the big selling points of Shopify. When you sign up for our app, you kind of had a bit of disappointment where, oh my God, this thing's so easy. It works so well. Can I just change the email though to make it look the way I want? And more design conscious e-commerce companies are going to want to do that. And all of a sudden now we can offer that. We can also use it as a selling tool. So if you're a bigger company and you sign up, we can create a custom template just for you. We're also going to build out like a marketplace. We're not going to charge for them. A gallery, I guess you'd call it, of templates. And we're going to employ the lead pages strategy. You know, the way they built their big list is they gave away free landing page templates. They said, hey, here's a great landing page template you can use for this scenario and this scenario. And go off and use it on your own for free. Or you could do it really easily with lead pages. So we're going to do the same kind of thing. Hey, here's a new abandoned cart campaign template. Go off and use it on your own in Mandrill or whatever, SendGrid. Or you can do it really easily and then use that to build. You know, so it creates all these opportunities.
Nice. Yeah, that's interesting. I never thought of email templates for cart abandonment like that. It almost seemed, when you first described it, it seemed like a nice to have. Because really, what more do you need than just showing the product that you need to check out and like maybe the company logo? But now that I see all these opportunities to use like custom templates and
right, you can use them. And what I've been doing is when I'm talking to a big prospect, I just go in and I create a template for them, and I send it to them and I say, here's a screenshot of how your template would look, and now it's awesome. And it's super impressive and it shows off the app and it's responsive and we have the little like desktop iPad mobile phone view. It's like it's just an asset. And the other key thing it does is it opens up the potential to go beyond e-commerce, because we couldn't work with hotels before because we had this shopping cart section that was hard-coded.
I see a
hotel reservation or a WordPress theme, it doesn't work the same way as like item, quantity, price, total. So now that isn't a requirement. So a whole bunch of stuff that I should probably stop revealing, but needless to say, very kind of exciting on the potential front.
Very cool. Well, Any other updates?
Well, right along with that, and I can't resist, what happened during this process is we realized we need internal development resources. Hiring a contractor who has other things going on, regardless of how talented they are, is not the same thing as having someone internal that only cares about Carthook and has their incentive and life tied into it. So we have decided to hire a full-time developer. So if there's anybody out there listening or know someone listening and they want to make a few million dollars, I mean be lead developer for Carthook, then they should get in touch with me, jordan@carthook.com.
There you go. Be
employee number one.
Yep. Awesome.
All right. Cool, man. How about you? We want to hear some updates on what you've been doing besides flying on airplanes and eating. How was Barcelona, man?
Barcelona is amazing. It's definitely one of my favorite, up there in my top favorite cities now. And so my wife came with me on this trip, and it was awesome. We had about 3 days or so to kind of explore the city before MicroConf. And we really kind of jam-packed all of the sites, you know, seeing like the Gaudi work and Sagrada Familia, yeah. And
La Rambla and the food.
Yeah, yeah, just kind of walking around those little neighborhoods and eating a lot of paella and seafood and tapas. It was really
Bocadilla, right? Boca, those little sandwiches they have—is that what they're called?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was beautiful. You know, we went and ate down by the beach area a couple times, and man, it was awesome.
Nice, man.
And then the conference was great, and we'll get into all that in a minute.
Yeah. How did your business do while you were away? I feel like that's always
good. Yeah, and this was probably the very first test for me with Audience Ops, and I've been through this test a number of times with Restaurant Engine, where I go away for a week or you know whatever, and I'm out of the picture, and I need the team to kind of really run with things. And this was a very good first test for Audience Ops. Things ran very smoothly. I was, you know, the team basically handled it. And we published a bunch of blog articles during the week I was gone, you know, for our clients and everything. So all of that went really well. There were no major issues. I mean, I was in touch with the team, checking in, you know, kind of every day, but I didn't even get a SIM card or anything for my cell phone. So I didn't have data service when I was running around Barcelona. So I had Wi-Fi like in the hotel. I wasn't in the hotel very often. We were basically out all day and most of the night every day. So when we go to like a restaurant or something, you know, I was like, oh, do they have free Wi-Fi? You know, and sort of like, you know, just trying to check in wherever I can. And really like quick, like 1-2 minute opportunities to check
cool.
in
and nothing's any, on fire.
Like any like urgent Slack messages or emails. You know, definitely I had to let a bunch of emails kind of pile up and I'll get to them later because they're not urgent. But yeah, everything went pretty smoothly. I was pretty happy with that.
3 months in and you have like a functioning business that doesn't rely on you.
You have to
teach me about this one day.
Yeah, it was good. It felt pretty good. And you know, I also went into this period of, okay, so like last week was the first of 3 back-to-back trips that I have this month. And so I'm home right now for about 3 days. And then next week, I'm going out to Cape Cod. It's like on the coast, on the east coast of the United States. And my family, like my brother and his wife and, you know, my mom, and, you know, we're doing like kind of an extended family get-together kind of thing out there for a couple of days. So that's happening next week. And then after that, I'm home for another couple of days and I'm moving out of my condo for good. So we're moving furniture and all this crap. And then we drive down to Virginia for Brendan Dunn's Double Your Freelancing Conference.
You guys are driving down there as like the first leg of your trip?
Yep.
So you're between Barcelona, Cape Cod, and Brendan's conference, you are traveling, packing, and hitting the road.
And hitting the road, yes.
All right, so this will be the last podcast for about a month. Sorry, everybody.
Probably, yeah. But, you know, so I go into this month of September knowing that I've got back-to-back trips, moving out of the place and everything, so it's going to be crazy. I'm not going to get any real work done, like producing new assets or building new things in the business. It's mostly on maintenance mode and, you know, staying in touch with the team and making sure everyone's getting served. But I know that I have a lot of time, like going to Barcelona, had a lot of time on the flight, and I'll be driving a lot in the next couple of weeks. So I have a lot of time, and like hanging out at Cape Cod, I'll be just basically just like sitting on the beach for a couple of days. A lot of time to kind of think and do a lot of strategic planning work. And I think that this is a good time for that, a good month in where AudienceOps is at right now, because I feel like now we have the service basically complete. All the service processes and all the systems, that the team is in place, got a really solid team together. And every aspect of the service, from the new customer onboarding to the weekly blog production line that we have going, and then the content promotion piece that we're just refining and finishing up now, the service is basically done. So now my focus turns to sales and marketing and really getting ready to drive hard and put all of those pieces in place, starting with our content marketing for AudienceOps, which, you know, we're in the fifth month of being a content marketing company, and we're not even doing it for ourselves. So I actually spent a lot of time on the flight to and from Spain, mapping out the next steps for getting our content in place, ideas for the types of topics and themes that we'll be covering on the blog, lead magnets, publishing schedule, what that's going to look like, who's going to be writing the posts. I know that I will be writing a lot of these articles about content marketing, and then thinking through webinars. That'll be kind of a step two, and building the email list. We're going to incorporate some paid Facebook ads and retargeting integrated with our content marketing. So putting all these ideas in place on paper so that we can really hit the ground running probably by the last week of September into October, and hopefully start publishing stuff in early October. So that's kind of the next thing that I'm working on. At the same time, we're getting this content upgrades plugin ready to launch. Right now it's in private beta, and I've already invited a handful of users. All of our clients are using it now. We're using it and creating content upgrades for our clients. So that's in place and running. But I'm also inviting other people. So if you are interested in using the content upgrades plugin for WordPress, it's in private beta right now. You can get on that list by going to contentupgrades.io. And then we'll aim for a public launch of that hopefully by end of October. That's kind of the plan. It'll be kind of a crunch, but working hard to make that happen. So that's all kind of happening. And a lot of it is kind of in my head and jotting down notes and plans and things right now. The other big announcement that I want to make today is Big Snow Tiny Conf 2016. So if you've been tuning in for the last couple of years, you know this is something that my friend Brad Tunar and I have been organizing every year. So we'll be doing the third annual Big Snow Tiny Conf trip in January of 2016. And this year, this time around, for the first time, there's actually going to be two Big Snow Tiny Confs. There's going to be Big Snow Tiny Conf West, also happening in Colorado. So there's going to be two trips, and you can find out about the one in Vermont, which is the one that Brad and I are organizing. That's happening January 25th through 28th in 2016, and all the info and details are at BigSnowTinyConf.com for that one. And then the Colorado version, Big Snow Tiny Conf West, is happening on February 8th through 11th, and that's actually being organized by Dave Rodenbaug. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, but Dave's longtime MicroConf attendee, and he's been running a successful WordPress plugins business. So he's the guy kind of behind that one. Info for that is at BigSnowTinyConfWest.com. So both of these trips, we're going to be selling spots to on September 24th. That'll be about 2 weeks from today's date, the day that this episode goes live. So if you want to get in, and these are really, really limited spots,
That's the best part in my mind. It's not a conference of,
it's called
MicroConf. It's small, but this is 10 people. That's That's like a mastermind
weekend. Each house is 10 to 12 people. And so, there are very limited spots, and a couple of spots are kind of reserved for people coming back from last year. So, if you want to kind of get in on that, they will sell out immediately. So if you want to, get your name on the email list, and that'll be going on sale in 2 weeks. Hope you can join us. We'll do what we do is basically half day skiing and snowboarding, and then half day hanging out, talking business. We do some kind of attendee talks. We do dinner. It's a ton of fun. This will be the third year, and I just can't wait. I'm excited for myself because I'm actually, my family is going to be traveling, doing some long-term traveling. In January, we're going to be living in Austin, Texas. So I'm going to fly to Vermont and go to the Vermont trip. And then by February, we're actually going to be living in Colorado. So I'm going to be nearby, and I'll be going to both of these trips. So it should be a lot of fun. Jordan, we got to get you on a snowboard and get you out there.
Oh, good God. I keep trying. I keep going, and I just end up miserable every time. I don't know what to tell you. I'm like a short brown Jew. I'm made for the sun and the water, you know, not the snow.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's
nice, man.
Content
upgrades looks good, man. I want that fadeaway feature so people can keep reading the article. That is a killer feature in my mind because it doesn't break up the flow. Someone got the value and then they didn't leave the post they were reading and get disrupted and have to go to a landing page that said, hey, go check your email. Like, that's not the ideal experience.
Yeah. Yeah, and right now we're integrated with MailChimp and Drip, which makes it really easy, especially for MailChimp folks who always say that, like, if they have existing subscribers on their MailChimp list, they can't send them something new, or they can't get them to opt into something new because they're already on the list. There really isn't an easy way to do that, and this plugin kind of makes that easy. And then, of course, with Drip, you can get them subscribed and tagged up accordingly and all that. So,
I mean, just for a minute before we jump into the MicroConf stuff, when you think about the next step for audience ops, does outbound sales, like, does that enter the picture for you? Is that just down the road? Is that just not your preferred method? Because I've kind of been obsessed with this for a long time. And I've been listening to a bunch of great interviews, one on Saster with the guys from, what the hell is this company called? GuideSpark. And then I've been listening to that Growth Everywhere podcast with Kyle Porter from SalesLoft that I probably mentioned previously. I've been talking to a few other guys in a different mastermind group. Justin McGill from LeadFuse. We talk about time to hire, hiring salespeople. So it's kind of like that's always on my mind. And the challenge is the average revenue per user. It's like if you're selling $100 a month product, it's really hard to afford a salesperson to hit the phones. But if you're selling something for $500 to $1,000 a month, all of a sudden you can meet that threshold. You can pay that salesperson $500 or $1,000 for every close, and they can go off and make $10,000 a month, and you won't go broke doing it. So I look at your service and I'm like, there are a lot of people who would want this, and it is in that price point of you can't afford a salesperson. So that's just something that would come up in my mind. Yeah. So I want to just put it out there.
Yeah, that's a good question. I was actually thinking about that. Well, I was thinking about the cost to acquire a customer. This is one of the, as I'm thinking through a marketing plan, I was sitting on the plane yesterday, and yeah, that is something that occurred to me that, you know, at this price point, $1,000 to $2,000 a month, and that's actually low. We'll probably raise that at some point. We do have a lot more money to spend to acquire each customer. But my thinking on that right now is also that we don't need that many customers. And so at first, we're going to start with an inbound approach, get the content marketing rolling, get some ads rolling to get them into the content. So we'll be kind of cold ads outbound in that sense to get them into the email list and into a sequence that would lead to a pitch to request a consultation. But it would be mostly inbound consultation requests, which is what it is now. And we still get consultation requests even with no marketing right now. To meet our targets for what I'm targeting for the next 6 to 12 months, you know, we really only need to bring on 2 to 3 new customers each month. And that'll increase as time goes on. So we're going to kind of slowly scale up the number of customers. And the other thing is that we are very selective with the types of customers that we accept. Like, we actually have been turning away quite a few leads who are basically ready to sign up, but the problem is that they don't really fit the type of client's audience that we work with. We basically work with B2B software companies. You know, we'll get leads from like consumer brands and things, and it's just not the right fit for what our writers write for. So
what do you mean by we don't need them, as in to fulfill the plan that you have kind of going?
Well, I mean, at the price point that we sell, we don't need hundreds of customers this year, you know? So if we have an inbound sales funnel and we're building an email list and building traffic, which we are kind of starting from ground zero. I mean, of course, I'll give it a little bit of a jump start by announcing it to my existing audience and network. But if you figure you only need like one or two to three of these of these visitors to end up converting to customers each month. That kind of sales funnel is, if I can work like one webinar a month and get 10 to 20 people even just attending that webinar and get one of them to sign up, I mean, that works.
Right. You know? So it's just different math. You know, software company needs 30, 50, 100 customers a month, which means, you know, 200 trials a month, which means it's just a different, different set of math.
And the other thing that I'm thinking through right now, and this is all just in concept stage right now, it's like, what is the bigger picture of audience ops? And the service is only one part of it. We're already starting to release a software product, a WordPress plugin. I think there are going to be a couple of more WordPress plugins over the next year. So we're going to be like part console, part productized service offering with a set of clients driving that side of the revenue. And then we're going to be part, you know, selling tools, and that would be another set of the revenue. And then eventually I also want to get into info products, teaching about content marketing and teaching our process for doing it. So ultimately the goal of Audience Ops is to be, you know, the done for you service, selling the tools and educating about content marketing. You know?
Yeah, I like that. It reminds me of a podcast I was listening to recently with Laura Roeder. You know, really, she's sharp, man. She's impressive. I think it's also on Growth Everywhere, that podcast that I'm clearly into these days. But she talks about, right, they had a services-based business for handling social media, and they just released Edgar, which is a tool, and that's at $150K a month already. And it's because they had the experience and audience from one thing that transferred really nicely to another thing. But she talks about they're doing cold ads, and it's just because they know it so well, and they built the tool the right way because of their internal knowledge. So it kind of starts to sound a little bit like that, like, you know, Audience Ops like has customers and then an expertise, and then you can release other things, info products and software.
Yeah, and that was exactly what my talk at MicroConf was all about, was making this transition, well, first from like freelancing to owning a productized service business, but then using that to drive revenue really quickly, get customers, get an audience, and then start to release software. And I had a bunch of case studies of people who've done that. And you look at like Justin with LeadFuse, what I've done with Audience Ops and Restaurant Engine, and you know, so many others, just kind of like Craig with Podcast Motor. Selling the productized service first, and then I know Craig is working on a software product for podcasters, so it's, you know, making that transition and then funding that through the revenue from the service. And that would make sense.
We are customers of Podcast Motor, and Carthook is a customer, and I'll basically buy any software he releases because I know it'll be according to the way we want to do things. Nice, man. So let's dig in a little bit. We went on a little longer than expected, but you're still awake. So let's talk MicroConf.
Yeah, sure. So
how was it? How was the feeling in general? You know, I don't know if you want to compare it to our experience in Vegas, but you know, what was the overall feel of it?
Great MicroConf. I mean, it's hard to say a lot of negatives in general. Like, you know, going into it, especially, so this is my third MicroConf. You know, going into it that you're going to enjoy all the conversations that you're going to have, and the talks are going to be great. So it definitely didn't disappoint. Differences from Vegas to MicroConf Europe. I mean, just on first impression, you notice right away that MicroConf Europe it's noticeably smaller in attendance. I think it was something like 150 thereabouts attendees, maybe a little bit more. Vegas, especially this year, 2015, Vegas seemed much bigger than Europe. And the way that I saw that was, I mean, I spoke to a lot of people at Europe. I mean, I didn't speak to everybody in the room, but I felt like I had multiple conversations with some of the same people. Whereas Vegas, it was like new people all the time. That was one thing. The other difference, there's definitely a difference in the stage of of people at Europe. There were more people who seem a little bit, so Vegas people seem to be a little bit farther along in their stage. And it's not the case for everyone. There are still new folks and still kind of people midway and you know, further along in Vegas. In Europe, it seemed like the majority were still freelancing, you know, consultants by the hour or working a full-time job and aiming to build a products business in the next year. Some people who are a little bit farther along and doing it, but they seem to be in the minority in Europe. Whereas in Vegas, I had conversations with people who were running seven-figure businesses, and they're completely unknown, but they're attendees at MicroConf. I didn't see too many of them at Europe, which was cool. It was really I enjoy talking to those people and meeting and hearing where people are at. That's mostly what I'm asking people is like, what are you working on right now? Where are you at? I don't know if it just happened to be my experience this time around, but I feel like this year and in MicroConf Europe, for some reason, people seem to be more open, more transparent. And people are really transparent in MicroConf in general.
Right. It's like, how is that possible?
Yeah, but it seemed even more transparent in Europe. In terms of, you hear talking about numbers and revenue, but I think more so about like stories and behind the scenes strategies and what people are working on and what people are planning. And some of the talks, you know, were really, really pretty revealing and people really opened up. It was just something that really struck me at this year's MicroConf, which was great. I thought it was really cool. And I think it's one of the things that just makes MicroConf so unique in general as a conference is that this community is in a way it's so tight knit. And there are people who are friends and we see each other again each year, but then there are other people who are new, but they're following along with all these different podcasts within the community. And it's like this, it's this thing. It's really cool. It's much different than any other kind of conference.
Yeah. It's more accessible. It's like, I don't know. It's just easier to get to people, email people. Everyone's like a nice, normal person. No one's got a crazy ego. It just doesn't have any of those elements.
Yeah. And people's nice, goals definitely. Here are, you know, for lack of a better word, like to build a lifestyle business. And by that, I don't mean like a passive income business. I mean, people just want to do their own thing. People just want to have freedom to hang with their families and work on a really cool business that they enjoy working on, you know?
Yes. Best of all, you don't hear the phrase, I want to make the world a better place.
Yeah.
If I hear that fucking phrase one more time, I'm going to freak out.
Exactly.
The MicroConf crew is much more grounded in, no, I'm going to make a successful business and I'm going to do it my way. And yeah, I think it'll be interesting over the next few years to see where things go and what changes and what funding does to that, where people get it to different stages. All right, cool. So let's talk some specifics. How about like these individual talks?
Yeah, so I kind of have the list of speakers. I think it's somewhat in the order that they went through. The conference opened up with Justin Jackson. Great talk here, you know, great energy. I like Justin's stuff in general. I'm a fan of his podcasts and his ideas, especially when it comes to marketing. And I really like his approach to just understanding the customer and having empathy for the problem that you're trying to solve. I think he got that across. He had some really interesting and kind of fun examples in there. He used Iron Maiden, the progressive metal band, as a marketing case study, believe it or not, which is really cool. He had some like classic video games in there, like back in the day before there were any kind of like online purchasing of video games. You had these games who literally have a screen in the game that says, "Send me cash or a check to this address in Texas." You know,
in the middle of the video game.
Yeah. For like $38, and Justin was talking about how like he paid that and people do it, like, so, you know, getting the point across, like, don't be afraid to ask for the sale, you know. So just really fun examples, and so I followed Justin's talk. I was the second speaker and I was just What part of what really made me nervous was that I was following Justin Jackson, who...
Didn't we do that last time also?
Did we? Yeah.
I think it was Justin Jackson, and then me and you went right after him.
Yeah, so he is a tough act to follow, man, because he's got the energy. He's just a really great public speaker, fun and like positive. And so I felt, and I'm generally, pretty nervous. And when it comes to public speaking, it's not something that I do very often. So it was a little tough, following his act, but I think my talk, went pretty well. I was talking about productized services, obviously, and, making the transition from freelancing to building a productized service, as I talked about a bit. And I think it resonated pretty well with the audience there. I got a lot of good feedback, a lot of really great questions afterward. I think it went pretty well. I was happy with the slides and how I put the presentation together, but then when I was up there on stage, I kind of went off my presentation notes a little bit, which caused me to kind of repeat some parts and kind of lose my place a little bit. I'm not sure if the audience actually noticed that, but I knew it, but I don't know. I was pretty happy with it overall, and I was happy that I finished my talk early in the first day so I can just like enjoy the rest of the conference. Let's see who else was on the first day. Sherry Walling gave a really good talk. That was really good. She had some interesting examples. I forgot the exact title of her talk, but it was about our timelines and our personal stories and being aware of our stories, and how everything in our past makes up who we are and what we put out to the world today. And I think there's for entrepreneurs especially, we're constantly thinking about the future and thinking about the current situation at hand and looking ahead and what do we need to plan and what are the next steps. But, she kind of reminded us that it's important to remember where you come from and why your story exists and how all this kind of fits together. I liked her examples because she talked about the backstories of founders that we all know, people in this community and well-known founders and kind of, who they are and where they came from. So that was really interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting because we end up looking at other people a lot too. And we also end up measuring up against them. And we say, oh, once I get to where they are, then I'll feel a certain way. But it's hard to just think about yourself and like, okay, where am I and should I be happy with where I am and how come I'm doing this a certain way because of my experience? All this stuff adds up. Your experience in high school, your experience in college and your social experiences and yeah.
Yeah, and I'm just going to skip ahead here because that brings up an interesting point that I thought about while I was at MicroConf Europe, and that's you have all these different people who are at different stages in their progress of building their business and building their career, right? You got guys who are just starting out and learning things and new tactics that are coming out. And then you got guys like Rob and like Peldy and Patrick McKenzie who've been around and have done a couple of businesses now and have really progressed, advanced in their stair stepping, if you will, right? To take Rob's framework there. And I think everyone, definitely me, I'm able to relate to something in their story, even if they're at a completely different stage than where I'm at right now. And the guy who had the most impact for me listening to these talks was Peldy, who gave a really, really fantastic talk. And he's, miles ahead of where I'm at right now in my business.
Right. So he runs Balsamiq.
Balsamiq, yeah. Which I've been a huge fan of his company and a really big fan of using the software for years too. But he talked about a lot of awesome things, but one little tactical thing that stuck out to me was like how he handles employee reviews and how he communicates with his employees and how he incorporates them in his decision making process. And that's something that I'm kind of working out right now in audience ops. So I was able to like take little tidbits of ideas and think like, well, how am I going to apply that? And then the other thing that comes to mind here is Patrick McKenzie's talk and Rob Walling's talk. And they both gave basically the same presentation that they gave at MicroConf Vegas this year, which was what, like four or five months ago. Basically the same slides, same talk. I think they probably changed a few things and updated a few things from then to now. And I remember watching both talks this year, but for some reason at MicroConf Europe, I kind of received them a little bit differently. And that's because I'm at a different stage right now than where I was 4 months ago. Just working on different things. I mean, I was literally working on a different business 4 months ago than I am now. So that definitely plays a role in it. But like listening to Patrick's talk back in Vegas 4 months ago, he was talking a lot about the sale of appointment, not appointment, his bingo card creator. And at the time I was going through my sale of Restaurant Engine. So I was really relating to that part of his talk. And then he has a whole other section talking about how once you've been through it once, you can kind of go so much faster and learn all these lessons and really apply them in, you know, much faster the next time around. And now I'm seeing that, like where I'm at right now, and that's what I related to this time. So it was really interesting. And the same deal with Rob, you know, he gave basically the same talk, some, you know, updated a few things, but different things kind of jumped out at me. I think last time it was more about the early progression of Drip and how they changed their positioning. That really resonated with me last time, but this time it was more about how he's recently converted from working with like contractors to hiring full-time employees. And that was an interesting, and he talked a bit about that and that made me think a lot. And that's something that I've been thinking about for Audience Ops. I know at some point I'm going to need to make that transition. So,
And Peldy and Balsamic, are they distributed?
Yes.
Because I think that's,
I believe they are.
Yeah. That's one of the next things for people like us to figure out. Like, you know, the normal everyone works in the same office thing has been done for decades, and a lot of it's been figured out. And then all of a sudden remote started kind of growing and it makes more sense. And, you know, we have Philippines, New York, Portland, and Chicago right now in Cardhook, like our customer success. You know, so and there isn't all this laid down foundation of best practices. We're all kind of trying to figure out. Everyone looks to 37 signals. And so there's just a lot to be figured out.
Yeah.
On how to do
one
this
little,
stuff.
One little thing popped out to me from Peldy's talk. So they are remote. They are distributed, and one thing that they do to manage that is they have something called, I think, the Balsamic Golden Hour, and that's the 1 hour in the day where I think all employees are expected to be online.
And interesting.
And other than that, they can be on their own schedules, but there's this 1 hour, whatever it is, where they need to be online.
Right. I wonder what they do in that hour. Are they just all on Slack? Are they chatting? Are they in like a group video?
I'm not really sure. But you know, another conversation that I had at MicroConf was with Anthony Eden, founder of DN Simple, and he gave a really great attendee talk too. And I was able to actually have breakfast with him, and he was there with two of his employees on DN Simple. So we were all chatting about having a remote team. And one of the questions I asked him was, I think they're a team of like 10 distributed at this point. And I was like, how do you manage, how do you create like a company culture being a remote distributed team? And, you know, because that's something I'm also thinking about, especially because my team is growing really, really fast. Like we're up to about 8 employees within 4 months, went from like 0 to 8. So we're growing really fast, and I'm trying to make sure that the team is working together really, really well. Everybody uses Slack. We use Slack. It seems like almost every remote team that I know of these days is using Slack. He talked about this one little idea. This isn't necessarily related to culture, but about how they manage distributed stuff. Like we use Google Docs for all of our procedures. And he was talking about how they use GitHub for procedures, like not just code. And I thought, like, I use GitHub to manage our code for the WordPress plugin that we're developing, but they actually use GitHub to manage like internal documentation and procedures and all these other kind of HR documents and all this stuff. And they have you know, a record of commits and a change log of these things. And it's really helpful. So that was just like a little tidbit. Like these are these little actionable ideas that you take away from these little random conversations that you have at MicroConf. So that was a good chat.
Nice, man. The attendee talks are always interesting. It's like the talks are good, and then the attendee talks are like one step closer to your current experience, at least for the majority of people there.
Yeah. So I'll just kind of highlight a couple of the attendee talks that stood out to me. Anthony Eden's talk was really good from DN Simple. He had like good energy, you know, speaks from some pretty good experience there. And there were like, I think, six or eight attendees, and they all gave pretty good presentations. But the other two that were stand out to me were Jane Portman gave a really great talk about doing a UI audit, which is kind of an audit of your user interface, your design. And she made a good point early on about how the design and the look and feel of your app is kind of like an afterthought, but it still has such an important impact on the success of your app. And she kind of went through this, an exercise that you can go through to step-by-step evaluate the UI in your app and find ways to improve it. And I believe she's coming out with a book that kind of goes through this exact audit process that you can actually use in your app. So her site is uibreakfast.com.
Yeah,
so
she's good. I follow her on Twitter.
Yeah, really solid designer, great teacher on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's such a huge challenge because what we've experienced is that you really care about the UI and design once, and then you take care of that page or that feature, that section, and then you're like, okay, we got it right, and then you move on. And then you don't think about it, and you don't think about the entire experience and not just that one page that you got right. You just have too much to do. So yeah, what I try and do is I try to sign up for our service like once a week.
Oh, nice.
I just go through it.
I like that.
You know, and sometimes also now that there's more people on the team that something's changed that I either knew about or forgot about or someone didn't tell me or something. Like I just wrote a blog post for Carthook about the 10-foot test, basically like make sure you use color the right way to highlight the buttons you want people to click so they don't look like the rest of the page, that they stand out.
Yeah.
And then I go to our sign-up page and I'm like, fuck, it's like the same as that color. I'm like, you know, and I wouldn't have looked at the sign-up page a few months ago for weeks because I'm just doing other stuff. So now I'm trying to do it more as we're making more changes, but it's a hard thing to keep up with.
That's a really good tip. I never thought of that. Just go through your process once a week, you know, or on a regular basis of some kind. But because I know that I don't do that at all. I don't you know, and then these things kind of come back to bite you. The other attendee talk that stood out to me was Anders Peterson from timeblock.com, who they create like not a time tracking software, but like a time management software. And he creates these physical time blocking notebooks, which are really solid, really beautifully designed, nice to work with. So he was talking about, you know, he made a joke in it. I think the title of his talk was something like how I tripled my revenue in the last year. And he was like, well, that was basically just clickbait to get you to vote me into the attendee talk. But the point was that he was making in his talk there was that the reason why he tripled revenue was that he actually asked for advice and asked for help at the last year's MicroConf, and that advice led to a triple in his revenue. And so he, like so many of us, and I know for myself, are always a little bit afraid to ask for help from people. But MicroConf of all places is such a great place to kind of pull someone inside, try to pick their brain for a minute. And that's exactly what he did. And he kind of talked about the importance of that. And I thought it was really great. Really solid talk there. Let's see, kind of going down the list. I think we're getting into day two here. Alex Yumashev, I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right. I spoke to him for a while in the hallway too. Great guy. It was good to meet him for the first time. I liked that, you know, he talked about like kind of bootstrapping his company and sticking with it for years on end. And just like describing like how they kind of tried lots of things and learning as you go, and kind of a reminder that it really is all about learning by doing and figuring out your own little tricks that maybe you read about them somewhere, maybe you don't, probably you don't. You're really going to actually learn it and internalize it once you do it yourself. That's kind of what I took away from hearing Alex talk, which was pretty cool. He was focusing a good part of his talk on SEO and different SEO tactics that these days, you know, there's a lot of talk about how SEO doesn't matter or about how like you can't really do SEO anymore, but you can. And he talked about different tactics that actually, you know, are still in play. So that was pretty cool. Rob Walling talked about, you know, the same talk as last year, as I said, and that really stood out to me. I kind of covered that a minute ago. Peldy opened up day two in the morning, and for me, that this talk made the biggest impact for me. This is really the standout talk from my experience this year. He shared some really unknown stories about the history of balsamic, which I'm not going to get into here, but it was really really interesting to hear the stories, but also really moving about how he handled it and how he handled his thought process and his decision-making process through it all, and how he asked for feedback and how his relationship with the team, but mostly. That his talk, I think, was about his evolution of becoming a CEO of the company, and really kind of what he was getting at was like becoming a boss and embracing that idea that I'm the boss and I have to make these decisions and people rely on me. And what I kind of took away from that, and is it's something that I continuously think about now, is that after you get past the early stages and after you've done a couple of things and you start to see progress, there begins to be like a total lack of guidance out there and lack of education and lack of workshops and books and podcasts. And you just can't really get the same guidance that you can when you're just starting out. When you're just starting out and you're getting customer number one, or you're building your first product or whatever, there's so many books and courses and podcasts and people you can follow to learn. I'd say half of what you need to learn, and then the other half you got to go do it. But once you get a little bit farther along and into these years that Peldy was describing, there's so much that you have to just learn on the job, and for every person it's going to be completely different. So even if you get the advice from a mentor or from an advisor or your mastermind buddies and things, which are so important and so crucial, I think, once you get a little bit farther along, still their advice and their perspective is still going to be different than yours. And everyone is going to come at something in a different way. And the other thing that made me think, just listening to Peldy talk there, was that I'm constantly feeling like as the owner, as the sole owner, the sole founder, I don't have any co-founders, right? Like I'm the only, I don't have any partners or anything. So all of the decisions come back to me. And as far as I know, I think Peldy is in the same position with Balsamic. I'm constantly thinking about like, well, what am I supposed to do here? Like, what is the correct decision? Like in blackjack, when you're at the casino, you know, in the game of blackjack, there is a correct move for every hand, like based on what the dealer is showing and based on your cards,
right? Regardless of what your emotions are,
you know, you're supposed to double down when you have 11, or you're supposed to do this. You're supposed to, like, statistically, that is the correct decision. But running a business is not that way. Like,
it's a more a creative enterprise.
Yeah, and like, so I'm constantly thinking like, well, what am I supposed to do here, and what would be like the most statistically correct decision in given this scenario, but then that doesn't always align with like what my gut is telling me, you know. And I think,
and everyone has different advice. Everyone says, well, you should listen to your gut, you'll be right more often. And some people say, no, you should really do a different way. And I think it's a function of the fact that fewer people get to that stage, fewer people are at that stage at any given time, and increases in complexity as you get further along, that the situation becomes more unique and less less susceptible to advice and best practices, right? So there are like management books, but at the end of the day, you have to be creative and interpret the information you have at hand. And then, yeah, I hope the talk gets published, you know, eventually. I don't think it will.
I mean, I know that he said, and a couple of people who are speaking at MicroConf, you know, say at MicroConf when they give the talk, like, we don't want, like, please don't tweet this out or tweet any of the things that I'm sharing in this talk out. It's really just for the room, which I totally understand and respect that.
Yeah, and I think everyone respects it. I mean,
yeah,
people did in Vegas, and you know, a lot of that information I haven't seen anywhere because people respect it. I mean, the person's going out on the limb to do it.
Yeah, and it goes again. It goes to the uniqueness of MicroConf and the value of being there. To be honest,
yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Look, it's always inherently interesting to listen to someone who's really successful doing something somewhat similar, but it is another level of experience to have that person be like humble and open, and it not just being like, look how awesome I am and here's how I got here, but it's this sucked at certain times and it was brutal and this is how I handled it. And
yeah. Oh, so one more little thing that stuck out to me about Peldy's talk, and then I'll kind of, you know, jump through the last couple of talks here. He had this concept of, so this part I'll share, this concept of thinking about the natural size of the company that you're building. And
explain.
Yeah, so by that, and this is the first time I've ever really heard this described this way, when you're just starting out and you're saying, this is the problem that I want to tackle with my problem. I want to start this company to solve this problem, right? Like in your case, like I want to solve the cart abandonment problem.
Right, and optimization, okay.
What is the logical size of the company, like people-wise?
How could you possibly know that?
Right, you can't exactly know that.
Okay.
But it's a good exercise to start to think through the next steps of where this might progress to. You know, for example, like if your goal is to just have a one-person company or a two-person company and you don't want to grow your company any bigger than that, like you prefer to stay really small, then you have to think about, all right, well, the problem that I'm solving here, is this problem completely solved with just a two-person company, or is it going to actually eventually require a 20-person company? Mm-hmm. And you kind of have to get your head around that.
Or a 20,000-person company.
Yeah, if you think about Balsamiq, what he was saying was that at first he really only wanted to be a one- or two-person company, but they had so many users, and the demand of customer support became so out of hand that he had to grow the company, and then he had to embrace that and be a bigger company.
So if he's tackling a problem that a lot of people experience, and if you're at all successful in solving it, then I guess it will push the boundary of whatever you were planning,
it's going to get bigger. Yeah.
Huh.
And so you have to start to kind of embrace that mentally. And I think it works the other way around as well. You know, like if you, I don't know, like being ambitious about growing like a huge, massive, 50, 100 employees, is the market really there? Is the size of the problem really big enough for you to tackle that? So just like thinking about like what is the natural size of the company that you're building? Maybe you won't know that from day one, but you start to develop that concept as time goes on.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. I remember reading something this previous week. I don't know, Mark Andreessen or one of the VC guys on Twitter was like, the law of something, expansion. Basically, whatever a company raises in funding will be spent in 12 to 18 months. If it's 250 grand or 25 million, you expand to whatever the capacity in front of you is. So this is kind of going about it in a slightly healthier way and saying, look at the problem and what that requires.
So I'm just going to cover two more of the talks. And Rachel Andrew gave a really good talk. It was cool for me to meet her for the first time. I've been following her stuff for the last couple of years. And she co-runs a content management tool called Perch. And she runs that with her husband. And it was interesting to hear her talk about a little bit about what it's like to run a company with your husband, to run something with, like, you know, someone in your family. I mean, that either that really works for you, and we were talking about this, and it really works for them. But like in my experience, I've always tried to completely separate my family life from my work life, you know. And just, you know, really what she was talking about in her talk was this longevity, running a small bootstrapped company. And I know that they've been at this something like 5 or 6 years. And she was kind of talking openly about what their next strategic steps to kind of begin growing their team and what the next steps look like marketing wise. And she was talking about how she speaks at like 30 conferences a year. And that's like one of the key, drivers of their marketing for Perch. So she tends to speak at a lot of, web design and development type, conferences, because that's their audience and their customer base. And that it really works for driving, most of their customers. And so that kind of got me thinking about audience ops a little bit, because as I was thinking about our marketing plan, which I'm in that mode right now, I had never truly considered the idea of speaking at conferences as a piece of a marketing strategy. I always see speaking as kind of like something that I happen to do on the side anyway, and it might have some network effects that have an impact on my business, but it's not like something that I optimize and be strategic about. It's just something that I do. But I could see a point at some point, you know, actively seeking out opportunities to speak at conferences to other founders and things about content marketing and best practices and things like that, and kind of, you know, relate that back to audience ops.
Yeah. I love it. Take someone up on stage talking about it. For you, who is currently at a conference, to speak at that conference to like hit you upside the head, like, wait a minute, what I'm doing right now could actually, you know, if I did it in a different way, more systematic. Yeah, I love the strategy. I mean, going onto other people's podcasts is a version of that same thing. Like, it's a very straightforward way to give people value, a lot of it at once with you and your voice attached to it. Obviously, in person up on stage, there's nothing more powerful than that. But podcast kind of does a similar thing.
Yeah. So just one more of the talks that I'll just kind of quickly highlight here as we wrap up is, there was an interesting new format of a talk, with John Ndege, and he was, so he's a founder of a bootstrapped app that I think does, you know, over 100K a year, in revenue. The app is for like financial advisors, I believe, some kind of management tool for them. And it was an interesting format because Rob Walling was on stage with him and kind of sitting down doing like an interview style talk. So pretty similar to the format that it was Rob Walling and Jason Cohen at last year's MicroConf Vegas. The difference here is that Jason Cohen is pretty farther, you know, much farther along running these big companies, WP Engine and everything. So it was kind of an open dialogue between him and Rob. This one was John Ndege giving basically a presentation about things he learned bootstrapping this, you know, 100K a year startup. So he had a bit of a presentation, and then Rob was kind of like interjecting with questions and with, you know, key takeaways as the talk was going on, and that was interesting to watch. So I really liked the format, and I could see that being an interesting format in future microcomps with different types of founders. And Rob or someone else having like an open dialogue on stage. That was pretty cool.
Very cool. Yeah, I think I've seen interviews with him. I think he might have gone through the foundation and did the whole idea extraction thing on financial planners. And yeah, so there's a lot out there to in terms of interviews and stuff to learn from him. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, like overall, it was a really, really good MicroConf Europe. I hope to make it out to Europe again for another one. It was cool to meet everyone out there, and yeah.
While you were out there, and I saw all the tweets about it, I wanted to be back. I wanted to like see people and just learn more from what they're doing and talk and hang out and like actually feel that sense of, oh, there are a lot of other people trying to do the same thing. And it's like, I'm, you know, it's normal and the struggle is normal and you're not alone doing it. So it's important.
Yeah, totally.
Nice, dude. Well, good to have you back. I guess we'll talk to you in about a month.
Yeah.
No, we'll figure it out. We'll
squeeze something in the next couple of weeks, but you know, we might have an off week or two. And as we do some traveling.
I'm in Chicago this weekend and New York next week and so on and so on.
Yeah.
And I'm doing Miami in the winter again.
Oh,
yeah.
There you go.
I'm doing Miami in the winter. I think it might be I'm doing the winter in Miami. I think it works either way.
You're wintering in Miami? Very cool.
I am. Cool, Bri.
All right, man. All right, talk to you soon.
All right, everybody. How do we close the show out again? If you like this episode, head on over to bootstrapweb.com for all the episodes. We love you. Hook us up with some 5-star reviews if you haven't yet. And we'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. All right. Later.